Hi, everyone. Welcome to Co-Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Sarah Boston, and I'm so excited to welcome Dr. Andy Rourke to the podcast today. I have been on his podcast several times, but now he's going to be my guest. Dr. Rourke is a practicing veterinarian, international speaker, author, media personality. He's the founder of the Uncharted Veterinary Conference. He wins awards for his veterinary columns, but also for his speaking. He's all over all the socials. He was really a pioneer in the socials, doing kind of sketches about veterinary medicine on Facebook before that was even really a thing. He went viral before that was even really a thing. And most importantly, he is my friend. He is just a wonderful person, and he performs improv regularly, and improv kind of infuses a lot of his life. Some could say being a veterinarian was also improv for him, and we're going to get into all of it. He has some great advice for people, veterinarians and non-veterinarians. You know, we came up with a really good catchphrase, just do it. I don't think anyone's thought of that. I hope you guys will love listening to Andy as much as I loved talking to him. Welcome, Dr. Andy Rourke, to Co-Medicine.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
I'm so excited that you're here. The tables are turned because I've been on your podcast many a time.
Yes.
As
you
a
were
guest.
You were my first podcast guest.
Oh,
you were. You and I
was?
I was screwing around with the idea of having a podcast. You had written something. You had written something about vet medicine, and you had written about, it was a very scandalous hot topic at the time. But it was about pet owners treating veterinarians badly, and you had had enough. That's what it was. And so I had you on to talk about you being mad at pet owners and scandal. It was great for me. Because, you know, controversy sells. No, not our people, because it's all, the only people who listen to my podcast are veterinarians. And they were like, yeah.
There is pushback now. People are like, don't shame the client. I'm like, well, but sometimes, yeah. Sometimes,
yeah.
Sometimes, yeah, actually.
There's nuance, right? It's like everything where it's like,
yeah.
People are like, don't shame this person. I'm like, okay, come on. At some point, that person needs to be shamed. Like, at some point. But, like, don't group them together into a group and be like, hashtag not all pet owners, you know?
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
But there are some behaviors that need to be, you know, people are mean and rude sometimes, and that's not okay.
Yeah. That's what I was saying in my previous scandalous, I don't even remember that I wrote.
Yeah,
but
it was
that's
something like that. It was years ago.
Amazing. Well, and then actually, just to come full circle, because I was thinking about starting this podcast and I had this idea to start this podcast. So of course I called you for advice and you were like, yeah, just start it.
Just do it.
Go. And I was like, oh, you're like, yeah, don't stop talking about it.
Yeah.
You know how you start a podcast? You start one. And yeah.
It's the same way as people who are like talking about doing stand up. They're like, yeah, I'm going to like do it. I'm like, I'm just working on a set. I'm going to totally do stand up. Like, I do stand up. Not yet, but I will. And you're like, shut up.
It's true.
Just go do it. And then I don't care if you bomb. Just go do it. It's amazing how many people are talking it up and talking themselves up to it. And they just don't do it. And it's like, for God's sakes, man, just do it and then see how it goes. And you might be like, I hate this. And that's fine.
Yeah, I love it. No, it was great advice. It was really good advice. You just gave me a flashback of this memory like a really long time ago. Back in the day, I think I was a surgery resident. I was at a friend's house. They're having a big party and a big hot tub party. And I was like sitting in the hot tub and there was this random guy there. I don't know why he was there. Anyway, I was talking to him. I was like, what do you do? He's like, I'm a screenwriter. And I was like, oh, like, what have you written? Nothing.
Nothing. Yeah.
I'm like, well, so am I guess.
Yeah, I'm also a screenwriter.
So you can't, I don't think you can say that. You just do it. That's what Andy says. And it's the best advice. So if anyone's thinking of podcasting, stand-up, improv, anything like that, just start.
There's so many people who are waiting for permission. Like some important person somewhere is going to bless you so that you can do this thing. And that's nonsense. Like, man, the amount of stuff I've gotten to do in my career just because I did it is incredible. And like, I still have a great freaking job. I keep waiting for grownups to show up and be like, you're not qualified to do any of this. What are you doing? No one's come for me. And just,
no.
I don't know, just do it.
I love it. That's the theme of this podcast. It's called Just Do It. So
just do it. I think someone else has that theme.
That's
I don't
catchy.
Know.
I don't know. It could catch on.
Exactly right.
I can't think of another way to say it. So I'm saying that. And if Nike wants to come after me.
They are known for squashing blossoming podcasters. It's like just right before their prime.
Someone is going to find out that we took their catchphrase, just do it. I'm going to get like a cease and desist letter.
Yeah. A bill, an invoice.
I'm going to keep saying, I'm going to see how many times I can say it during this podcast.
Just do it.
So what you're saying, Andy, is just do it.
Just okay. Do it.
What? So I'm going to start a bit with your origin story as a veterinarian.
Okay.
I know a lot of this, but I'm going to pretend I don't. Actually, maybe a lot of people know because you're a very, very famous veterinarian. But when did you finish school and kind of what area of veterinary medicine did you start out practicing in your practice now?
So let me just say that I have like one of those shameful origin stories among vets, right? And tell me if you agree with this. But when you're a veterinarian and someone asks like, when did you want to go to vet school? You're supposed to say, when I was born.
Yeah.
Like I popped out of the womb and I was like, vet school. And I was not that at all.
Really?
Not at all. No, I wanted to be a human doctor. Like my father was a human doctor. And so like I went to college and he was like, I would not be a doctor again. He was just like, really? Human medicine. Oh, yeah. I know you have human medicine comedians on here. So I don't want to say bad things about their job.
No,
but like, I'm like,
say bad
no,
things
it's
about
just,
them.
There's so much. Well, I mean, you're in Canada too. American healthcare. Oh. It's a hot mess. But there's so many strings and it's just, I don't know. There's so much just red tape about who gets to do what and liability is crazy. And just, I mean, again, I get it. But boy, the fun of like when my dad was, you know, in the 70s cutting surgeries and like that stuff is that it ain't that anymore. And so he was like, I don't think I would do this anymore. And I was like, oh, crap, because all I've got is this biology degree from a liberal arts college. Like, what the hell am I supposed to do with this? So I was dating this girl and she wanted to go to med school. And she decided she was going to go do a fellowship at the National Institute of Health first. And so she applied for this thing. And I was like looking over her shoulder. And what turns out is like at the National Institute of Health, they've got 150 more, I don't know, laboratories there. But they only have one application. So you send in like an application for their student fellowship and they just disperse it to all the labs. And anybody who needs help is like, all right, I'll call this guy. I had no idea. I had no marketable skills. And so I was like, I'm just going to send this. And it's going to go to all the labs and like someone will see me and be like, there he is. His karate classes that he's taken mixed with his biology degree and his interest in craft beer making. That's our guy. And they will just, bam, it will be a light bulb. And they will introduce me to this vocation that I didn't know existed, but it's perfect for me. That's what I thought. So I applied. That did not happen. That's when I learned about government budgets.
Oh.
If you're a government agency and you have money and you don't spend it by the end of the year, the government will take it away from you. You won't get it next year. And so those guys, they're like drunken sailors at the end of the year. Like they literally have to spend this money. And somebody was like, hire that kid. And like, that's how I got a job. They really didn't have anything for me to do. And so I'm there. And I realized pretty quickly, like, you guys got nothing. I just left.
You left.
I would go in the morning. I was there every morning. I would
check
go.
In.
I would. And I'd be like, yeah. Have you got anything? And they would be like, no. And then I would leave. Or I would do what they wanted. And then I would just leave at lunch. I just wouldn't come back from lunch. And no one ever said anything. They just left. And so I would just catch the metro to the zoo, to the National Zoo, which is free, which is great. And so at first I was like walking around the zoo, just killing time. And then I started volunteering at the zoo. So basically I got a job, but I don't go to it. So I would just go volunteer at the zoo. And at the end of the year, I've got a rec letter from the National Zoo and the National Institute of Health.
Impressive.
I'm just making friends. Yeah. And so anyway, this girl I was dating, at this point, she's ready to go to medical school and she's from Florida. And so I apply. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to be a college professor. I like to teach. I like to talk. I like to tell stories. I got this the biology degree and the National Institute of Health and the zoo, like all make sense. And so I applied to get a PhD in zoology. And I got in, and then she dumped me like 3 weeks before I went to Florida, where I know no one, going to a PhD program to work in a snake lab. I was all into snakes at the time. And so like, I'm going to work with venomous snakes at a lab in Florida where I don't know anybody. And this girl breaks up with me. And so I'm like completely adrift. I go there. I meet my wife. I hated academia, which you might have some familiarity with academia and why one might decide it's not the path for them. And then after I washed out of that, I was like, well, I love this woman and I don't want to leave. And the other thing that I could see me doing is vet school. And when I went there, they were like, oh my God, you have a biology degree and you work at the National Institute of Health and the zoo and you have a master's degree in zoology. It's like, you must have been angling for this your whole life. And I was like, yes, I have been.
You're like, I met a girl. I met another girl.
I met another girl.
A better girl. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, I've been chasing women until I came here.
That's a great origin story.
It doesn't win over the veterinary crowd, but it's not the worst. It's not the worst one I've heard.
No, it's good. You were in the pocket. You were in the science.
I mean, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You were sciencing. I mean, I don't know.
I was. No, very much. I like animals. I like, it's not like I'm a fake. It's like I.
No.
I didn't look at a cow at age 4 and be like, yeah, that's
so that
what
was
I
me.
Want.
I was at 6.
Yeah. See, I wasn't that was. I wasn't that. I love that. I love that people are into that. My path has been winding.
I think your path is better. I will say because, we'll get into it, but I just didn't explore other things, even though I was from a very artistic family. But I was like, dogs, dogs, dogs. I just love dogs. That was it. I'm going to be a vet. Yeah.
Do you feel like you were the person who went on a first date and then got married?
Yeah.
Like your first date ever in your life. And you were like, yep. And this is the one.
Sign me up.
Yeah, I didn't do that. I definitely played the field.
I did not play the field.
Do you regret that? Do you ever wonder, like, what would Sarah Boston engineer be like?
No, not engineer.
Sarah Boston art teacher?
I think a little more exploration would have been beneficial, I'll just say.
Okay. I don't mean to make you feel bad. I'm just...
No, you didn't. I mean, that's what I think. I'm doing stand-up comedy, Andy. Like,
I know.
I'm doing a podcast. So yeah, I think more exploration is good. Yeah. So I'm almost the opposite of you, but here we are kind of doing similar things. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, kind of. I have no tattoos because I know that I can't commit to anything. And for, any amount of, like, I'm like, oh, that's a long time. I don't, what if I change my mind? People ask me, do you have tattoos?
Married. Nope. You are married.
Yes.
And you have children. Those are commit. Like, those are fairly big commitments. I understand them.
That's
I don't
true.
Know.
I will admit, those have stuck. They've stuck.
Yeah. That's
both
good.
The wife and the children have
and
stuck.
And the children have stuck. Yeah, that's good.
That's true.
It's frowned upon if they don't stick, apparently. Especially the children.
Yeah.
I understand. Okay. Now, you finished vet school.
Okay.
And?
I went into baby raising. So we had our first baby my fourth year of vet school. And so all these, but it was funny, for like 4 years in vet school, I was like, I don't know, am I going to do an internship? Am I going to do a residency? I'm going to become a surgeon like Dr. Sarah Boston. It's like, nope, I'm going to have a baby and get a job. That's what I'm going to do. So yeah, we had a baby and I was like, I got to get a job. I just went and got a job. I liked it. I like people. As you can tell, I like talking. I like telling stories. I like to laugh. I like people. I like helping people. That stuff all makes me super happy. And so I've got this baby and I'm a first year veterinarian, and I can't believe I get to do this. And people are crazy and fun. I enjoy them in their quirks and weirdnesses. And so anyway, and so then Facebook had just opened up to the world. So it was 2008 and Facebook was like, hey, you don't have to be in college anymore to have a Facebook. And so I was like, aha, I can share pictures of my baby with my family, extended family. And so I just started that. And so at first I was just posting pictures of my kids and doing that stuff. And then I started sort of telling jokes. And then I started posting pictures of vet medicine. And, all my friends from vet school had started following me and everything. And so they were liking it. I was just telling jokes on Facebook back in the day. And this was the very beginning. It was before you had this big algorithms driving everything. It was still basically everything got shown in chronological order. It didn't pick stuff and show some stuff more than other stuff. It was basically just you put it out. And it was like Twitter, kind of before Twitter started doing that. And people just liked it. And, it's like that encouragement you get when you're doing jokes and people are laughing. There's nothing that's going to push you forward beyond like, oh man, I killed that. People laughed at like, and Facebook was great because you could like quantify it. You're like 100 people like this joke. I think I was wildly insecure because I was a brand new doctor. And I was like, at least there's one thing I know I'm crushing. It's this Facebook thing. I started telling jokes and I started like writing stuff and then I just started getting opportunities to do more stuff. And yeah, it kind of went from there.
Yeah. I mean, you were kind of one of the early, I would say a pioneer. Can you be a Facebook pioneer? I don't know. Is that a thing?
In
I feel
the
like you were.
Space, I was there. I was definitely there.
Yeah. And you were kind of just like, oh, what's this? And you didn't have a plan. Like you weren't like, oh,
no
plan. This is my platform and this is my. Oh, that's the other theme of this podcast. Andy has no plan.
I have no plan. No,
but it works out. It kind of works out.
it does kind of work out. It does work out. I think plans are overrated. I think planning is important, but plans are useless, as the old quote goes. In my life, I've made so many plans, and the vast majority of them are a freaking joke. I mean, an absolute. My first plan was to go to medical school, and then I was going to go and do this lab thing and probably get back into medical school and like, no. And then I was going to go be a college professor and no. But everything has freaking worked out. There's nothing wrong with like, I'm going to do this next. That's my big thing now. You should kind of know what your North Star is, like what you care about, what you think is important in the world. And then you should just know what you're going to do next. And like, that's it. Those are the only two things that you need. And I think everything else works out. Try things and figure out what you like and what you don't like, and then try to figure out how to do more of what you like and less of what you don't. For me, it's always just worked that way. There's never been a master plan. When the global pandemic hit, everything just disappeared. Like I was traveling and doing a bunch of work and speaking and all that stuff. It all went away. And so I was like, holy crap, your plans, you know, you got to be kidding me. Who cares what your plans are?
Yeah. No, the pandemic did not care.
No.
About anyone's plans.
Oh, no. The pandemic was 2020. My wife she's young. She's, I mean, mid 40s. She got diagnosed with breast cancer in 2022. So we're a year out. And again, like 40-year-old women are not supposed to get breast cancer. What the hell is this? And boy, all my plans looked real dumb when my wife had cancer. And you just go, holy crap. I will tell you, for me, it was a big sort of kind of wake-up call of like, what's really important?
Yeah.
But then also like, you don't have any control, Andy. Like, you don't have control. Why don't you just have fun and, you know, do what you want to do and start your podcast and do the things that make you happy? Who knows what's going to be or what's going to happen? And like, man, that ability to kind of take your hands off the steering wheel a little bit, has made such a difference. I'm so much happier with my hands just gently on the steering wheel, you know?
I'm going to say something Southern. Let Jesus take the wheel. Let
Jesus take the wheel. Yeah.
I have to ask, is your wife okay?
Yes. Yeah, totally.
Okay.
I'm sure you love when people come on your comedy podcast and talk about cancer, but it's...
No, I love talking about whatever's happening. And I actually, because I had thyroid cancer and I make jokes about it, one of my stand-up teachers is just like, you need to tell people that you're okay because they're going to worry the whole time. And I'm like, ha, 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 I had thyroid cancer. It's so funny, but yeah.
No, so first of all, I love your thyroid jokes. I love your thyroid cancer jokes. And I also forget that because I'm just like, oh, yeah, everything's fine.
Yeah.
All good. Yeah. Like, totally fine. 1 year scans, all looks good.
Good.
Not fun. If somebody's like, hey, do you want breast cancer? You should say no. Decline firmly but politely.
Yep.
And just don't do it. But however, yes. And I'm sorry, I should say that. Everything good. But still, like, it was enough of a there for a while. You're like, I don't know. I don't know. It changes your perspective, you know?
Yeah, it's why I do comedy. Oh, now we're going to talk about cancer for a while. I don't know why on a comedy podcast, but I recently heard of a colleague who has been given 1 year to live
with
cancer. And I don't know, that really hit me. I was like, okay, well, I think I have 30 years to live. And I translate that into how many more dogs I'm going to have.
Yeah. What did you put? Is that three? Is that two?
It's three, I think.
Is it two? It's too small. Two small dogs?
Too small.
If you get
three big.
If you get really big, it's like five.
It could be. You're
like,
right.
You know, like
I go for medium large. That's kind of my...
But like, if you went for Great Danes or huge like Mastiffs like
and
stuff.
And stuff. Yeah,
like Wolfhounds?
Less. That's less.
But you could get your count up more. I'm just saying. Like,
but
you,
more
could have, you could have more. It would be. Yeah. No, that's... You got to factor that in as well. If you want to do this with as little heartbreak as possible, you should get two Chihuahuas.
And just go...
Yeah, because they just keep going.
We'll all go down together. Yeah, I think I was going to get progressively smaller dogs as I age, because I always think you should be able to pick up your dog. I can barely pick up Earl. He ate marijuana once in the park and he went down and I had to carry him, but it wasn't pretty. And I was like, oh, you got to be able to pick up your dog. I don't know. It's kind of like a sliding scale or something. Or there's like an algorithm I can figure out for how many dogs I can have. Anyway, that wasn't the point. The point is 1 year and 30 years aren't that different. Really?
1 year and 30 years?
No, because we're all going to, we got to do what you want to do. That's it.
Oh,
that's,
yeah.
You know, it's not, it's like, it's just time.
It's a finite amount of time.
It's a finite amount of time.
When you think about how long the earth has existed, they're basically the same.
Which is 6,000 years, as you know.
Exactly right. Jesus take the wheel.
This is my vaguely evangelical podcast.
Exactly right.
Oh my God. Okay. That is amazing. And I think what we learned, I don't even know what your expression was. It was like, You should do planning, but not make plans. What was that?
Oh, yeah. There's this quote of planning is essential, but plans are worthless.
I never heard that.
Oh, yeah. That's a great one. That, or as Mike Tyson says, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
Oh, that's a good one. Because that's, yeah.
He says it differently, but it's a great Mike Tyson quote.
It is great.
Everybody's got a plan.
Yeah, sometimes it's life that punches you in the mouth, right?
Exactly. That's it, right? Like, yeah, totally.
This episode was sponsored by PetDX. I'm so happy to have them with us, and I'm so happy that they exist in general. You know, for most of my career, clients always ask me, isn't there a blood test for cancer? Why can't we do a blood test for that? And I was always like, yeah, that's not a thing. But you know what? Things change, and it is a thing now, because PetDX has developed OncoCanine, which is a blood test for canine cancer detection. Now, this test can be used to screen healthy pets as part of a wellness exam, or pets that we know are predisposed to cancer because of their age or their breed. Or you can use it in a dog who you suspect having cancer, who has an illness, and it just is another tool in your diagnostics to help you rule in or out cancer and help us really focus our diagnostics and hopefully help us to detect cancer early, because we know that if we detect cancer early, we have a much better chance of being successful in treatment. So thank you so much, PetDX, for your support. And you guys can check out oncocanine.info. That'll be in the show notes to learn more about this test and how to bring it into your practice. Okay, so you morphed into kind of Facebook, and I would call it sketch comedy. I know it was veterinary focus, but would you call it that? Or it's almost like what people...
It was sketch, yeah.
I feel like what you did then in 2008 is what people are doing now, like on Reels and TikToks. Like, I feel like you were the first person who was like, I'm going to make funny things about my profession. And
I was getting opportunities to speak to other doctors, right? So I really enjoy practice. I learned a lot about doing research and researching and writing when I was getting my master's and things like that. And so I kind of found this niche of like, I love to joke. I like pet owners. And then I kind of got into talking to vets about, you know, creating an experience for pet owners and stuff like that and communicating effectively with pet owners. And it was just, I like telling stories. And so that was kind of scratching my teaching itch. And so I was doing that. And I would go to these conferences and like, so social media was just getting going and everybody was trying to have video content and things. And so they always wanted to make video content. And so they would just interview people. And they'd be like, tell us about the top three things that you talked about. And God, it was awful. I mean, it looked so bad. You know, people who are just getting, like, you see them being filmed and their eyes are wide and they're like terrified. That was just the content they were putting out. And I was like, this is awful. I had a buddy named Dave Nickel, who was another doctor who was there. And he was also doing social media stuff. He's Scottish. And we would just have a good time after lectures and everything. And we sort of came together with this idea of we should make sketches. We should make a sketch. And then instead of telling people, hey, look, maybe don't tick the pet owners off like this, we would just make a heightened version of ticking the pet owners off. And that makes the point for you, right? Like comedy is simply heightening. And so I could take the things that we were sort of talking about and then just figure out how to heighten them. The way I started writing it was classic three-beat comedy, you know, sketch comedy, where you take a sort of absurd situation. And the second beat is a heightened version. And the third beat is the highest version of that. The guys who were doing the filming were so bored. They were so bored. And they were just like, please, let's do this. Like, this is a great idea. And so I started doing it. And then, you know, it's just classic comedy rules. Don't punch down. Sort of know who your audience is. Remember, sort of heighten. The punchline goes at the end. It's just basic sketch. And yeah, I started writing that and people really loved it. There just wasn't anything like that because social media hadn't been there before. So, you know, distributing stuff like that just wouldn't have even been possible. But it was new in the medium and it hit the time and people really liked it. And I was just along for the ride. I think the best thing for me was I just wasn't taking it very seriously. Because I think if I was, I think I would have, you know, clammed up or whatever. It was like 3 or 4 years later, so I was making these sketch videos and they were just going off in this niche. And this woman who I really respected was like, I just can't believe you do this. And I was like, what do you mean? And she was like, the other doctors are all being doctors and, you know, wanting to be respected. And you're telling jokes and just making stuff up. And you wear a dog costume. I have a dog costume in one of the videos. And she was like, I can't believe you wore a dog costume. It's just that mentality was so weird to me. It was kind of like, who are you trying to impress? I don't know.
I want to know who it is. Who is it? Let's name names.
No, I'm not
just kidding. I'm just kidding. But you were brushing up against something, right? I don't agree with that person, but it was different. You were doing something different.
It was.
When I was a resident, I used to make jokes in all my lectures. I always make jokes in my lectures. And I had a faculty member who really came down on me and was like, that's inappropriate. To me, I was like, no, that's not inappropriate. It's, you know, we're human beings. Let's just be human beings.
Yeah.
I'm interrupting you, but why did you know the rules of sketch comedy? Like, did you intuitively know them or had you taken some comedy classes? Like, why you're like, you know, it's classic sketch and we heightened it, but why did you know how to do that?
At the very beginning, I don't know that I had the words for it. You know what I mean? I knew that it felt bad to make fun of the nurses.
Yeah.
I knew that that was bad. It didn't look good. It didn't feel good. But it felt totally fine to pretend to be one of the nurses and make fun of the doctors.
Right.
That felt fine. And so I think that like at some point you just kind of trust, I would trust my gut and feel it that way. It didn't feel good to make fun of pet owners, but it felt good to kind of make fun of the team and the experience that they created and the pet owner who's like, what is this? A lot of it was gut. And then, you know, you and I are kind of cut from the same cloth in a lot of ways. I'm sure a lot of the people in medicine who also do comedy, they come up with an academic bent. And so, you know, I started reading. I started pulling stuff on sketch comedy, like what makes a good joke, things like that. I started watching YouTube videos on joke writing and things like that. And yeah, that's really kind of where I started. When the videos were really getting up and going, I was getting into improv comedy around then. And so the best thing for that was everything got streamlined and just got a lot cleaner. And my jokes got better. My sketches were tighter because I was doing improv 101, which was very much the punchline comes at the end, you know, the punching up, punching down sort of stuff. That stuff was really good. Key and Peele was really popular. And Dave Chappelle, the Chappelle Show had been out for a while. Then Key and Peele was really coming up. But, you know, Key and Peele are really, they're exceptional as far as like the workings of sketch comedy. Like when you look at their sketches, you can see they do a really good sort of blocking and tackling, meaning like understanding how a sketch is set up and heightened. And some of their stuff is just is so good. And you can watch it. And if you look at it analytically and say, what are they doing here? You can really learn a lot. But man, you know, the internet really unlocked all that stuff. I don't know if you remember when you and I were kids, the Comedy Channel was on and they actually had comedy, but that was it. Like that was, and it was just stand up. It was a lot of stand up.
Yeah. So, okay. So you got into improv, like you did classes and then you started actually performing improv as well. Is that right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was neat. It was this comedy theater. So I was doing public speaking and stuff. And so I had done Toastmasters for a couple of years, just working on public speaking, which is good. It's good about like collecting your thoughts. If you want to do acting, anything like that, it's good just to get some practice talking in front of people. And so I had done that. I'd done it for a couple of years. And then my wife got a new job and we moved. And so I got to this new place and I'd done it for a couple of years and it was great, but I was like, I was just kind of over it. You know, I was also looking at like education. And my belief is that education, just in general, is moving towards interactivity. I think people have got shorter and shorter attention spans. They don't like to just sit and be lectured at. I think the future of education is interactive. It's talking to people. It's hearing from them about what their ideas are and what their thoughts are and like turning it into a dialogue that sort of brings people up. And so that was kind of the weird idea I had. And so I wanted to be a part of that. And I'm doing a lot more teaching and stuff with doctors and with technicians and nurses. And so I just, on a lark, I just Googled improv comedy classes because I felt like that would give me sort of the flexibility to do audience work, right? Like it was just trying to get better at that. And it was like one of those crazy things in life where there was a class, it was 10 minutes away, it started in 2 weeks. And you know, it was just like, you gotta be kidding me. And so I plopped my money down. It turns out I was the only person in the class who didn't know there was a Groupon. I'm still upset about it. Everyone else there had gone in on a Groupon. And like, I was the only sucker. The theater owner is one of my dear friends. And I still talk to him about when he took my money and everyone else got a Groupon. But I got over it.
Clearly you're over it.
I am.
Yeah, that's obvious.
But yeah, 101, 201. And then, you know, started the student showcase and stuff. And you know, they have shows on Thursday nights for you sort of younger performers. I just kept plugging away. But this goes back to that, just do the thing.
Yeah.
I was like, I was not good. But I had a lot of stage experience and I was comfortable in front of people. That was from the lecturing and stuff I was doing and the other stuff that I'd picked up. I think I was much more comfortable than other people. I wasn't funny, but I was comfortable on stage and that's worth a lot. I could be a solid straight man as far as just hitting balls back to people. Like they would do character work and I could always kind of hit the ball back to them. And, you know, and then I started getting more comfortable and leading more and stuff like that. But after a while, you know, I was doing more and more, and just, I really liked it. As all this was going on, I was getting funnier in my lectures. I think my sketches were getting funnier. I was getting asked to do more and more stuff. And so at some point, there was a year, I literally, in 2016, I calculated it. I was on stage in front of people 100 days out of the year.
Wow.
100 days. I think I threw improv classes into that. Maybe a little bit of fudge, but still, like, that's working in front of people who are giving you feedback. But 100 days out of the year, I was either talking to veterinarians or nurses or improv shows or improv practice, you know, and a coach was giving me feedback. And it was like, I was so sharp as far as being able to work in front of an audience and just be good and be on, just because I did so much of it. I'm not saying my comedy was great or anything, but it was the best that it's ever been, for sure.
I think I saw you around that time in Florida, and you're doing a lecture, and there was like some weird tech thing happened. I don't know if you remember this. The sound from the other auditorium was getting fed into your lecture, and your slides weren't working.
Yeah.
Do you remember? And you were like, but it was kind of brilliant. I actually don't, I'm sorry that I don't remember what you were talking about.
I don't remember what I was talking about either. It's okay.
That's not because it wasn't a great lecture, because it was, but you know, I was like, oh, not to say you didn't care. I'm sure you cared, but you were just rocking with it. You were just like, oh, this room's possessed. And then you were just like, what's happening? But you weren't rattled.
Yeah.
Maybe internally you were. I don't think so. I think you were just like, all right, this is happening. You know, just kind of like the tenets of improv, this crazy tech stuff going on. And you're just like, okay.
It was the other person's, they had somehow the slide advancer was in the other room.
That's what it
the
was.
The other speaker had the slide advancer. And so like, I couldn't control it, but they were just, the other person was like hitting the button and the slides in my room were going, or they were both the same slide advancer. It was something like that.
It was bizarre.
It was bizarre. There was like 400 people in that room. Like, it was a big room.
Yeah. It was a big conference. Yeah. Yeah. That's what it was. That would actually be a very funny improv game.
It was great. You're right. It was really, so I can't believe you were there for that. That blows my mind. I had completely forgotten about that. But yeah, it was this big room and I loved it. I had so much fun. Oh, they were so into it. And I just rolled with it. And I think that may have been around the time that I was really like, this is a superpower. I am so happy just to go with this. And the audience, they loved it. And other people, younger speakers, that would have been the end of them. They would have come apart. And I was like, this is
great. I think that's the contrast, because I've seen speakers, people get stressed about speaking, you know, that aren't used to public speaking. But I've seen speakers, even just their video doesn't work and they literally look like they're going to start crying.
Oh, yeah.
Your video didn't work. Like, and I dream of the day that none of my slides work, like that I just don't have any. And they're just like, sorry, you don't have slides. And I'll be like, okay, Lynn, what are we going to talk about? And that's what your lecture kind of was. But I think that's where improv, you're just like, okay, yeah, your slides aren't working.
I have a dream.
Yeah. What's your dream?
Of being given a slide deck right before a presentation that I've never seen before and that I don't know anything about. And this is an improv game. The improv game is there's a slide deck and you've never seen it, but you're supposed to give like a TED talk with this slide deck that you have no idea what's in it. And I cannot think of a situation where in a medical continuing education platform, people would be like, I don't know, Andy, we need you to do these slides. Don't look at them, just go do it. Like, I can't figure out what happened, but I would love that opportunity. It might be a joke I do for myself one day. When I'm about to retire, I'm going to have someone else make a slide deck, and then I'm just going to go and just do it.
Do it.
And I'm not going to tell the audience I don't know what it is, but then when it's over, I'm going to see how I did.
I think we should do that. You organize conferences. You are the person who could make this happen. I could create a slide deck of surgical oncology and you could create one of
whatever
practice
it is I do.
Management, yeah. Communicate. What do you do? No, you could create one of whatever you want. And then I could give your lecture and you give mine. You have the power to do that. I'm volunteering right here on Co-Medicine.
I think you would do better talking about communication than I would do talking about surgical oncology. It would be funny though.
You don't know that. Then we could switch back. Okay, I'm just putting it out there.
All right. Well,
I think people would love it.
I'll write that in the margin of my notes and we'll see if it happens.
Just do it, Andy. That's the theme of this situation. Okay, you're still on Facebook. You're on Instagram.
Yeah. Right now, you mean? Like Emma now?
Not right now, but like...
Are we going through the timeline or are you asking me about right now?
No, I don't mean like right now. Like, are you kind of going through the timeline, but I think you just dipped your toe in TikTok. Is that true?
Yeah,
did you do it? Did you go there?
I did.
How's that? Because, I mean, you are the original person.
It's fine.
Do you like it?
No. I mean, yeah. So, okay. All right. So here's the thing. So when I started looking at TikTok a couple of years ago, the only thing that I would see on TikTok in the vet space was there was veterinarians and they dance, right? So there'd be music and they would dance. And then these little bubbles that have like pet health advice, like brush your pet's teeth would pop up. Yeah, they would point and it would pop up. And I was like, I'm not fucking doing that. There's no way. No way I am doing that. And people would be like, you should be on TikTok. And I was like, I'm not dancing and pointing at bubbles. And I got like more and more adamant about it until it became a bit. You know when you like feel strongly about something and people keep asking you about it until it becomes this thing? So it becomes this thing. And so I just like, I'm not doing it. And so anyway, I started making these other little videos and they were basically like, I was doing some writing and the people I was doing writing for were like, you should just record, talk to your phone and do like a 1 to 2 minute video of like what the article's about. Just tell them what the point is. And then we'll post on social media. I was like, you know what? That's not a big ask. I'll just start doing it. So I started doing it. And then it did okay. And then people were like, we're going to put captions on this so people don't have to unmute it. They can just see what you're doing. And they started doing much better. And then they were like, hey, can we just put this on TikTok? And I was like, let me go check it out. And so I go and I log into TikTok for the first time ever. And I didn't put any information in it at all, except I was a white man. Like that's all the information they had. Like I didn't, no preferences. I didn't connect to anyone, nothing. And you know what kind of videos I saw?
Boobs.
Boobs.
Yeah. Lots of boobs.
Just endless boobs.
A lot of boobs. Boobs dancing.
Yes.
Just boobs.
Yes. Just
that's
lots
what
of boobs.
White men like boobs.
They were like, what do we know about this guy? He's a dude.
He's a dude.
Let's
boobs.
Go with boobs. I was like, I can't be here. I don't want to be like this. And because some of the girls are quite young and I've got daughters. I've teenage daughters. This is just, I just don't want to be here. So anyway, long story short, I have someone who posts TikTok videos for me. One of the people on my staff. And I'm just, that's it. So you can go. And so now all I imagine is people like me going boobs, boobs, boobs. This guy talking about appreciating your nurses and supporting pet owners in times of grief. Boobs, boobs, boobs.
Yeah. I was on it for a bit and then I got off of it and I don't know. I might go back. I'm not
I
sure.
don't have a beef with it. I'm not dancing and pointing at bubbles. I'll say that. That's my thing. But also, it's like why I quit smoking weed. Like at some point, you know, I was like, I am bothered by how I just zone out. And like, that's how TikTok, I would just, there's like, boob, boob. And then like 37 minutes have gone by and I've watched some slam dunks. I've watched some Formula One racing. I've seen boobs.
Yeah.
37 minutes are gone. And I'm like, what happened?
And you only have 30 years left.
Exactly. I've only got 30 years left.
You might have more than me. You're younger than me, but I just, I don't
Maybe.
Know.
Maybe. Well, we'll see.
I was trying to find this thing you wrote quite a long time ago. I don't know if you'd be mad that I bring it up, but I want to talk about it because I love it. And it's kind of a little bit about how you're a dad and you're a clinical veterinarian and you're organized conferences and you speak at conferences and you do improv and you're a husband and you talked about the sled dog analogy. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes. You have to take care of your dogs. That's the one, right? Where it's like, you've got all these things. God, I hadn't thought of this in years. So the basic idea, tell me if I'm wrong, but the basic idea is I had this epiphany. So I don't believe in work-life balance, right? As people talk about it. I have never found the ability to balance my home life and my work life and my hobbies. Where I'm like, yep, I did the appropriate amount of work and I did the appropriate amount of hobbies and I did the appropriate amount of time with my kids and my wife and I got 8 hours of sleep and also I exercised. I've not had a day in 47 years. I haven't had one day where I got that right, I don't think. I don't think it's true. And so the idea with the sled dogs is that there are these things that we care about. There's like your home life and there's your work life and there's your hobbies And so this is for anyone who does sled dog racing. You rotate your dogs. You don't take one dog and just have it run and run and run and run and run and run. You rotate through your dogs. You drop off some dogs and you pick up some dogs. And I kind of think that that's the general idea is at some point you should just follow your hobby and you should be like, I'm going to work like I'm required to, but it's just a job. I'm just going to do it and I'm going to go hard on my hobbies. And then at some point you're like, you know what? I'm going to really engage with the kids and the family. Like again, always, but.
Yeah.
This time I'm going hard in the paint in the family spousal relationship. And then sometimes you're like, this is my opportunity at work. I've got a chance to do a thing and I'm going to go hard on it. And you just do that. It's funny. I hadn't thought of that in years, but that's the general idea. I still believe in it. I see people all the time, Sarah, who believe that they're failing. They're like, I failed because all I do is work. And then they stay home and they're like, I failed because I don't work hard enough. And I feel like I'm falling behind in my career. And you know, and it's just whatever they do, they beat themselves up for not doing the other things that they should be doing at the time. I still see that all the time. But that rotate your sled dogs, the idea with that is don't beat yourself up. You're running this dog for right now. And then we're going to rotate and it's going to be okay.
All right. I like it.
That was right. That was it.
I mean, I agree with you about the work-life balance because I find it ridiculous. And it's going to make someone mad, but I find the people that talk about that, like about wellness and balance, like they're not clinical veterinarians. It's like, you should quit your job. If you want to be happy, you should just do something. Like, you know, you should stop. But I'm like, oh, is that? That's my only, really? That's it, hey? Okay.
It's often people who are no longer in practice.
On a panel, talking about how they do like yoga, they exercise, and then they eat well, and they get 8 hours of sleep. And yeah, I don't know. And I'm like, okay, but how do I don't know. I've been struggling with that actually, because I feel, I don't know if you can speak to this, but like, it seems like a lot of veterinarians are moving towards 2 days a week or 3 days a week, or, you know, and I'm working about that right now, less actually, if I'm honest. And I'm like, oh, so this is how we can be happy. Is that right?
If you can get it, it's great to have. I'm not going to lie. I very much like working 1 or 2 days a week. That's great. Like, you don't get ground down.
Yeah.
It's nice if you can have a schedule like that, full stop. And there's a lot of other things I think that stop us from getting kind of ground down. I think the amount of autonomy you have is important. If you're just in a system and you don't have any say and you feel like everything's just kind of getting poured on you, I think it's really hard to tough it out and kind of keep it going. It's all the stuff you got to, there's a couple things I always say. It's like, I think you got to have a hobby that doesn't have anything to do with work. And I think vets are terrible at that. They're like, I'm going to go to work and then I'm going to go to a meeting about new medicine. And then I'm going to volunteer at the shelter on the weekends and Sunday horse show. And I'm like, oh, again, do you. But one of my things is, this is what I love about comedy, is I go and do comedy and the vast majority of those people there, they don't know that I'm a vet. You know what I mean? Like, you roll up and like, everybody's just there to do improv. And like, I don't really know what most of those guys do.
Really?
I mean, if I know them for a while, I do. But for the most part, I really don't know what people's regular jobs are. I don't know. I'd much rather just talk to them about comedy. You know what I mean? And kind of what they do. After a while, you kind of know. But for a long time, it was just, I showed up at improv and I'm Andy and I do improv with you guys. And that's kind of what it is. And our relationship was very much based on comedy. I thought that was fine. But I always tell people, like, I think you should have a hobby where you go and nobody cares that you are, you're a veterinarian.
Yeah. Yeah. I like having friends who don't care that I'm a veterinarian. I mean, that sounds weird, but that I could just be an engineer. I could be something else. They don't really care. And not to say that my vet friends care, but you feel like they kind of care.
I want people to like me with no idea that I might be able to help them out.
Oh.
Not that I wouldn't help them out. I don't want people to like me because having a friend who's a vet could be advantageous at some point.
Yeah.
I want them to like me because they have no idea what I do. I'm just a guy that they like. Sort of the self-identity part of it is kind of that too. But, you know, it's just sort of one of those things. You get tired of people asking you vet questions all the time,
oh,
too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, I don't even mind answering it that much. It's more, at some point, it's almost more like a principle of it, of like, oh, come on, you know?
Yeah. I've had a lot of that lately. I don't know why. I don't mind if it's someone I talk to regularly who's my friend. I just don't like it when it's someone I haven't talked to in like 3 years and they just sort of pop out of nowhere on my Facebook and they want like, and my advice is always like, yeah, you should go to a vet. Or
yeah.
They'll be like, is that expensive? I'll be like, it is, but it's reasonable. It's necessary. And then I'm like, and I'm done now. So,
I mean, you know, every now and there's one thing. There's people who show up and they're just, every time you see them, they've got questions. I had to get a new barber. I couldn't take my barber. That guy, once he found out I was a vet, it was just me sitting there and it was like 30 minutes. It was a 30-minute pet consult. And then the next time I would go back, it would be the same thing again. And he had done absolutely nothing that I had recommended the first time he talked to me. So that's what actually killed me. It wasn't even that he was hitting me up for advice. Because he's hitting me up for advice and then not taking it. And then asking me the same questions the next time I was there. So I knew he didn't take my advice. And I'm like, I'm not paying you for this. And so I had to get a new barber.
At the very least, you should have been cutting your hair for free.
Yes.
Let's talk about that.
They should have paid me to cut my hair.
Exactly.
But I'd still be going there. But yeah. No, I agree. I should have at least gotten the haircut for free, but.
At least a free haircut. No one gives me anything for my advice ever. I'm just putting that out there, people. I like Starbucks gift cards quite a lot. Okay. I just learned today, I think. Maybe I knew on some level, but you did. So you're still doing improv regularly. Is that true?
Yes. Yeah.
Like as a regular, you got a team or a group that you.
Yeah. So we've got I do a show called Local Legends. It's on Friday nights in downtown Greenville, and it's an Armando Diaz format, which means we have a person from the community who is the local legend, and they tell five stories from their life.
Oh.
And after each story, we do improv comedy inspired by that story.
That's amazing. I want to come visit and see it.
Yeah, you should come and check it out.
Putting it on my list. Places to go. People to see. But I learned that you have dabbled, but that may not be fair. So I'll let you use the term, but you have done some stand-up comedy.
Dabbling is a good term.
That's appropriate?
Yeah.
All right. Tell me about your experience with stand-up.
So I do professional speaking and stuff, and I do improv, and I've done that for a long time. And I've done sketch comedy as well, but I'd never done stand-up. Anyway, there was like a stand-up class. It wasn't that I felt like I needed a class to try stand-up. It was more that I needed a commitment to make me like sit down and do it. You know what I mean? And so I took this stand-up class, and I did enjoy it. It's much harder than I thought it would be. Especially the whole, like, you should write down all of your jokes sort of thing. And I'm very much in the improv mind of, I have a story that I want to tell. I have, like, a learning insight that I want to make. And I'm just going to kind of go and wing it and improvise, and it'll be fun. It was more challenging than I thought. And it was one of those things that came when I had a bunch of other work and things. And so, ultimately, I remember the guy who owned the theater who didn't give me a Groupon.
Yeah, the Groupon guy.
I was talking to him, and the class was over. He said something about feedback. He was gotten feedback on the students in the stand-up class. And I was like, what was the feedback on me? And he popped his phone open and he said, Andy didn't work very hard on his set, but he tells stories for a living. And so it was basically his job and he did good. And that's basically it. Yeah, it was like,
you could tell, fair.
It was 100% fair. It was like, Andy's a professional speaker. And so it wasn't awful. There was not particularly good stand-up. I did think that that was true.
Well, I think you'd be amazing at it if you decided that you wanted
well,
to do that.
You. But it's a bit, much respect for stand-up comedians. It's just that sort of fine-tuning and tinkering, I think, is really, it takes more effort than a lot of people think. I think a lot of it in comedy is like, what do you want to get out of it? I do some sketch for the videos and stuff, but I don't really enjoy it that much just because so much of my career is writing and staging things and logistics, you know what I mean? And tinkering and editing. When something starts to get too much like work, you know what I mean? I lose that love for it. And that's why I like improv, is because nobody lets me just, like I said, nobody lets me just have a slide deck and make up a presentation. I have to actually prep for it. But improv, I can just show up and just play and just do the thing. And nobody seems to care that I'm just playing.
Yeah, improv is really true play. Like, that's how I see it. It's like you're playing a game.
Oh, it's make-believe, yeah.
Maybe, I don't know if I told you this or not, but you put something out on social media, like, maybe 6 months ago, I think, and you were like, the middle of success feels like failure. Do you remember when you were talking about that?
Yeah, oh, definitely.
I don't know if you can speak to that a bit, but I, like, tell myself that a fair amount. Because I'm in it right now. I'm just like, what am I doing? So I don't know if you can just speak to that sentiment, because I love it. I think it's important.
Oh, sure. You write the book you need to read. It's funny. People are like, where do you get these ideas? I keep messing things up and having to fix them, and then I write about it. But yeah, the middle of success feels like failure. There's three points to everything that we get done, right? There's the beginning when you're like, this is a great idea. I'm going to start a podcast. It's going to be great. And then there's the middle when you're like, God, I got to get people scheduled. And then we're doing the editing and the processing and blah, blah, blah. And there's the end when like you put the thing out and people go, yeah, great job. Those are sort of the three parts. But nobody thinks about the middle part. Everybody's like, I'm going to have a great idea. And then people are going to tell me it was awesome. Beginning, end, right there. And we just forget about the middle. But the middle of the success story, it's not fun. It sucks. I mean, it sucks. It's when the yard is half mowed and it's hot and you're like, oh, I thought this was going to be a nice day to be outside. And I wanted my yard to be beautiful. And neither of those things is true right now. And so the middle of success feels like failure. It just means for a lot of these things, I mean, it's like, you know, when you start doing stand up and you go out and like the middle of success absolutely felt like failure to me, which is that I'm past the point of being excited about the idea of stand-up, and I am far from the successful part where people are like, man, you're really good and funny. I'm in the part where I'm just grinding and I'm writing jokes that aren't working and I'm getting some laughs, but not as many as I want. And it feels like failure. That's the middle of success. You know, if you want it and you keep going, ultimately that is required to get to the end. But it's funny. A lot of times we look around and we're like, God, I'm failing. If you could see into the future, you would realize this is the middle. This is the middle of success. This is the halfway point. And then ultimately you reach it.
I love it. It's a great philosophy. So I am a huge believer that improv would help our profession.
Hugely. Yeah.
I don't know if you share that opinion and how you think it could help veterinarians or other, because I'm learning through this podcast how similar all the healthcare professionals are. How can it help us be happier or be better at our job or whatever that means to you?
I'll tell you, the quick thing that comes to my mind, absolutely. So I think that the way that we communicate with patients and clients is changing in medicine overall. The idea, I think, is that the days of us being just unquestioned experts are over. And again, like I remember being a kid and my dad, it was the 1980s and my dad was the doctor and he was like, this is what you need to do. And people were like, yes, doctor. Presumably they did it. But it was definitely the doctor was the expert. And now those days are just over. There's so much noise and we don't have that level of credibility. And I don't think we're ever going to have it again. And so I really, truly believe that one of the keys to success with whatever field you're in healthcare is the ability to not argue with people, but to meet them where they are and to try to get on their team. And if you can meet them where they are and get on their team, then you can work to sort of guide them and try to help them along. There's nothing better that I've found for building the skills of understanding someone else's reality, agreeing with all the parts of it that you can agree with, and then framing yourself into that reality. The classic improv trope of yes and is listening to patients, it's listening to clients, hearing them, saying yes to all the things that you can agree to, and this is where we need to go. And that sounds so simple, but most of us just, we don't get that training of really deeply listening to someone to understand what they're saying. And then agreeing to it and saying, yes, I understand you feel that way. I understand that is your reality. I understand that is where you are. And given that those things are true, this is the brick I would like to add to the building. Like, this is the next step that I would like for us to take. Can we take this together? It may sound overly simple, but I just can't overstate the importance. I really think that that's what modern medicine is.
Yeah, I love that. All right. We're going to put links so people can find you in our show notes, but is there anything you want to promote or what's the best way for people to find you?
I'll tell you this. If you're interested in vet medicine and you're interested in kind of learning what medicine is like, I have a podcast called The Cone of Shame, and it's the one that Sarah has been on, and it is me talking to people about things that are going on in medicine. If you know somebody who's like, I might want to be a doctor one day or a veterinarian, I might want to go to veterinary technician school. Send them that way, but it's just, we just talk about what's going on in medicine. I try to keep it light and fun. They're good conversations that really sort of help you understand what veterinary medicine is like, I think. So that's what I would say.
All right. That's awesome. Thank you for all your time. And it's always great to talk to you either on a podcast or just in life. But this is a very serious last question. It's important. I'm trying to get Dr. Ken Jung to come onto my podcast. So the last question of co-medicine is always, you're not speaking to anyone right now, except for you're speaking directly to Dr. Ken Jung. Could you invite him to come on the Co-Medicine podcast and tell him why he should come?
Hi, Ken. So I've been a big fan of yours ever since you jumped out of the trunk in The Hangover. I thought that was hilarious. And the joy that you bring to the world, I just want to say thank you. My friend, Dr. Sarah Boston, is a veterinarian, and she is an author, and she has a lovely podcast talking about humor. And I just think that when we talk about making people laugh and bringing joy to the world, I think that she is doing really good work, and I think that you would be a great addition and that you would fit right in as far as what she's trying to do. And so anyway, she's amazing, and you're amazing, and I think that you would have a great time talking to her. And I think that you could bring some joy to the world with somebody who's already working to do the same.
All right, Ken. That's straight from Dr. Andy Rourke. We really want you on Co-Medicine.
Do you send him these every week? Is every Monday he gets an email with a voice message attached to it?
We're doing some things. We're working on some different angles to invite Ken.
I'm sure that inviting him 75 times a year will probably...
It's going to work.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
going to
totally
wear him
work.
Down.
It's going to... Yes, I think we're going to wear Dr. Kenshaw down, get him on the podcast.
You're like the Jack Russell Terrier of podcast hosts. Like,
hey,
you're going to get him.
Hey, hey,
hey,
hey, Ken, hey, hey. We'll see. We'll see. Time will tell. Dr. Andy Rourke, thank you so much for being on Co-Medicine. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on. And I can't wait to see what you do next.
Thank you, my friend. Thanks for having me here. This has been so fun.
And that wraps up another episode of Co-Medicine. Thank you so much for joining us. I want to give a shout out to Mark Edwards, who wrote the music for this podcast. He is a very funny comedian, also a musician who writes music that makes me laugh. I don't know. Is that a thing? I don't know. He can do that. Also want to shout out to Heather McPherson of Twisted Spur Media, who's our producer and editor, who makes everything work. I could not do this podcast without her. And I want to thank you for listening and for sticking with us in season two. If you're new to Co-Medicine, welcome. If you've been listening since the beginning, welcome back. It's great to have you here. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please share and like and give us a review. If you didn't like it, I don't know what you're still doing here. If you didn't like this podcast, you could do nothing. Nothing would be good. Okay. Oh, I started recording. Is it working?
Yep. I see it on.
Okay. Cool. Okay. Are you sure it's recording? Can you tell?
It says recording.
Oh, it says recording.
11 seconds.
Because the...
Yeah.
Okay.
This is your podcast, but I don't want to tell you how to do your thing like you're recording.
Do you want to play a game?
Yeah, I'll play a game. We can either play the mustache game or we can play second beats to first beats that don't exist. Second beats to first beats that don't exist is an improv game that we... I don't know if it's a real game. I don't know if the guys that I hang out with came up with it. But basically, you know how in improv you'll have a first beat, which is sort of a very grounded scene. And the second beat is kind of a heightening of that first scene. In this game, you just start with a second beat and there's no first beat and we just make it. So it always often sounds like just a ridiculous scene where you walk in and say something like, your ducks have taken my children. And then we just do a scene that is that sort of, it starts in Crazy Town and just goes from there, which is super fun. And the other one is the mustache game, which I think now that I'm talking through it, I think the mustache game is what we should play. So with the mustache game, on the count of three, you're going to use your hand to make hair features on your face. So okay. If you want to stick your finger under your nose and have a mustache, you can. If you want to go for a full beard, you can do that. You can do big eyelashes, but you're going to use your hands to mimic some facial feature. And then you're going to be a character inspired by that facial feature. We're going to talk as characters just for a moment so I can see what character you make from your facial feature.
Are you going to have
a... I'm going to do it too. Yeah, I'm going
okay.
Totally. We're going to be two bearded figures. We don't have to be beards. You can do other things. You can do sideburns or you could do long lashes or you could do nose hair, whatever you want to do.
Okay. For a moment, I'm wishing we were doing video, but...
I know. It is kind of hard. Let's go ahead and do it and then we can describe it and then we'll go. Ready? On the count of three. One, two, three.
Okay. I'm imagining a real person that I met. I have to take my hand away for a second.
Okay, you do it.
So it's a real person I met in New Zealand when I locumed at Massey. And there was a guy there, a veterinarian, and he had this crazy mustache that literally covered his mouth.
Okay.
And I don't know, he was on the news for something. A whole bunch of radio stations, like, they went crazy about this guy's mustache. And they were like, what a mo! Like, they just, because his mustache, it looked like, they said he looked like a whale that was like the krill of the whale. That's what they described him as. And they did not talk about whatever he was talking about, which was something veterinary related. They just couldn't get off his mustache. So I am making, like, with all my fingers, this huge...
I'm doing the soul patch. I'm just doing one finger right on, like, the butt crack of my chin.
Okay.
And just putting it there. Ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
So, I really appreciate you having me on your podcast. What are we discussing today?
Dude, we're talking about that you should just do it.
Oh.
You should just do it.
I'm a big fan of just doing it. I like to just do it in all aspects of my life. I just do it when it comes to personal hygiene and laundry, and then also dating and relationships.
I just did it. I wanted to grow the longest mustache that covered my whole chin. I just did it.
You did. Congratulations on just doing it.
Thanks. Everyone, when they see me, they always say, "What a mo."
What a mo. Great.
No one has ever seen such a mo.
And scene. All right.
And scene.
And scene. That's it. It's silly. It's fun. I like the idea that you just do something with your hands and then it inspires you to think about, what is this person and where does this come from? I think the big thing for me with like the mustache game, and this is silly, but it makes a good point, is that we find inspiration wherever we find it. It doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to even be meaningful. When I would make videos or do stuff in vet medicine, generally what would happen is I would look at something that would happen in medicine, whether it's like an argument that I had with a pet owner or with another doctor or something, and I would look at it and see what it was. And then there will be something else that's kind of weird that will bump into that. So like the NFL draft will come on and I'm like, oh, I'm going to do this argument and the NFL draft and I'm going to put them together and it's going to be this funny idea. And generally, like that's what it works. I love a lot of improv stuff where you do some physicality, you create a character from that physicality, you know? So maybe you have sort of a hunched walk and you think, who would walk like this? And that's just the creative stuff that I love. I love to just make that stuff. And I don't know. I also like the mustache game because you kind of do it for a minute and you throw that character away and you go, okay, that was it. That was one. That's all it was. It didn't go anywhere. It doesn't build to anything. I think that's good. I think everything in my life feels like it has to build to something. And so I've rebelled against that and been like, this goes nowhere.
Yeah.
There's no sequel to this.
It's just a silly moment and then it's gone.